Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday, April 18th. It is Good Friday, April 18th, in 2014. And this is Jeff Dunphy coming to you live from Phoenix, Arizona. And we are going to continue our conversation on a variety of things. Certainly, we're going to elucidate a little more things that help us retool for our coming of age. Good Friday is a magic time. It is a time when some very famous events happened, and followed by Easter Sunday, which an even more famous event happened. And consequently, it speaks to a renewal. Easter presents itself when things start to wake up. Although being down in Phoenix, it seems as if they've been awake a long time. In Calgary, it is still quite cool and cold, and we're just wallowing out of the season. So we had covered the first three or four of the seven postulates that were given by the great sages to Helena Blavatsky as acting as their amanuensis. And in fact, I want to cover those today, but I also want to chat a little about the tenor of the time that we are in, and also the tenor of our intention, which is to have people wake up to what's going on, have people wake up to what they're doing, have people wake up to a variety of things. So retooling is giving them arrows in their quiver, if you will, to facilitate their capacity to see things as they are, rather than as they are told to see them or as they wish to see them. And I think Wayne Dyer coined the phrase, if you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And this is probably not a bad mantra for some people to embrace, because it does effectively help how we can view things. Now, things, as Bosco and I started this whole program, and now as it's evolved with my show and the retooling aspect, things, at times, we speak very harshly of what is going on the planet. And it is not our intention to be fear-mongering. It is our intention to elucidate or turn the lights on so people can see what's going on. Now, we do. We have challenges in Crimea. We have challenges in the Ukraine. We have challenges with Russia. We have social, economic, political, possibly even military challenges going on right now with the nonsense that is happening there. However, when you look at this differently, perhaps, we can view all the potentially nasty events in light of that which has been given us by many, many of the sages from the past, and that is the future of mankind is absolutely extraordinarily brilliant. Even though we may be starting into a third world war, who knows? But there is a certain evolution of the planet that is coming, whether we like it or not. And in fact, for those who do have eyes to see, what we see is absolutely brilliant in terms of its coming. Good Friday and the Easter weekend has sort of the renewal and the refreshing air of spring coming about it. And we also, Bosco and I, have also spoken of gold for ages and ages and how important it is. And in fact, we are stepping into, or we are at the dawning of a new golden age. And it is in that reference that we bring it back into focus. And I want to reintroduce how vital and important gold is to this phrase, but also importantly, as we look at it a little differently. So gold was a very common commodity in golden ages, as it is in every golden age, because its natural emanation is a purifying and balancing and vitalizing energy or force. It is placed within the earth by what are referred to as the lords of creation, and these great beings of light and love who create and direct worlds, system of worlds, and the evolutions of the beings upon them. The outer mind, or the intellectual capacity of humanity, holds within it very little understanding of the real purpose for which gold exists on this planet. Believe it or not, it grows within the earth like a plant. And though it is constantly pouring out of purifying, vitalizing, and balancing current of energy into the very ground we walk upon, as well as into the growth of nature and the atmosphere that we breathe. I have a friend who was witness to a gold mining operation in Africa at the time. And he was, it was not lost on him that the workers in this gold mine were very healthy. They were mining gold, but there was gold dust everywhere. And it was an interesting demarcation from the coal mines, if you will, in Newcastle. So gold is placed upon this planet for a variety of uses. Two of its most trivial and unimportant ones are that being of used as a means of exchange. And as we've, as this whole program has evolved, we talk about how there will be a return to a gold standard or a hybrid of a gold standard. And we've also talked about how the Chinese and the Indians and many in the Asian continent are, they are generation seers. They don't see things in terms of the short term. They see things in terms of their children's and their children's children's lifetimes. And so consequently, we have seen an enormous demand for an accumulation of gold over the past several years by the Asians. They know something that we have been blinded to relative to the import of gold. So the scientific world doesn't understand and get how gold plays. However, it serves the same purpose to our earth that radiators do to our homes. So gold is one of the most important ways by which the energy from our sun is supplied to the interior of the earth. This is interesting stuff, and it balances of various activities thereon. And as a conveyor of this energy, it acts as a transformer to pass the sun's force into the physical substance of our world, as well as to the life evolving upon it. So the energy within gold is really the radiant electronic force from the sun acting in a lower octave. So consequently, gold is sometimes called a precipitated sunray. And as the energy within gold is of an extremely high vibratory rate, it can only act upon the finer and more subtle expressions of life through absorption. Now, in all golden ages, this metal comes into plentiful and common use by the mass of the people. And whenever such a condition occurs, the spiritual development of that people reaches a very high state. And as we like to remind everybody, the state and the stage of evolution of mankind is cyclical. It's periodic. So a civilization will reach the peak of its advance, and then it will start to fall away. Its vibratory rate will fall. And we have come to the end of a cycle. This would be called the Piscean cycle. And we are stepping into a new age, which is the coming of the age of Aquarius. And this is the time and the era, which I just made reference to, where the evolution of mankind, the spiritual hunger, if you will, and state of embrace will develop quite rigorously. In the old golden ages, gold was never hoarded, but instead was widely distributed into the use of the masses, who absorbing its purifying energy are by very simple, pragmatic way, their vibratory rates are raised. Such is the right use of gold. And when this law is consciously understood and obeyed, the individual may draw any quantity he desires him to himself by the use of that law. Imagine, if you will, being able to precipitate gold out of the universal ether, which is some of these masters have done and shown to suggest that the universe is abundant in that regard. Because of the gold deposits in various mountain ranges, one finds health and vigor in life upon the mountains that he cannot find in any other place on the earth's surface. No one has ever heard of detrimental effects coming to those who constantly handle pure gold. And this is what I was saying the other day when Bernhardt was in a mining operation, a gold mining operation in Africa. There was great health was abounded, right? So while in its pure state it is soft and wears away easily, still that very quality is the manner in which when you wear gold, when you have gold and own it, it comes off. It wears off, which is means that the gold thread, the gold leaf, the gold embrace of various aspects of humanity has and recognizes the import of gold. Okay, there's my little expose on gold, and now we're going to fall back into the postulates which we started last week, and we're going to chat a little about the first three, a review of the first three, and the first three were a bit demonstrative of the Holy Trinity, if you will, seeing as we're speaking of holy things and Easter, Good Friday. So the first three rays we could have is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The first three postulates we could liken to the three rays, the ray of will and power, which is the first ray, the ray of love and wisdom, which is the second ray, and the ray of active intelligence, which is the third ray. It also brings to mind the 47th theorem that Pythagoras put forward, and that would be the theorem of a squared plus b squared equals c squared, but more importantly, it is the joining of spirit and matter. So the vertical line of the isosceles triangle would be the spirit line. The horizontal line of the isosceles triangle would be the physical line. And the hypotenuse would be the blending of spirit and matter. Okay, so the various postulates, as we've been through them, is the first postulate was hylozoism. The second postulate, if you will, was all things live within the body of a greater being. And as we live within a society, a cell lives within an organ lives within a body, a fish lives within a school of fish, a bird lives within a flock of birds. The third postulate was all things are made in the image of God, or all things are there is a brilliance of Mother Nature that reveals itself in everything. I'm not sure if I mentioned last week the context of a hologram, but if you create a holographic plate and you shine a laser on the holographic plate, an image presents itself, a three-dimensional image presents itself around where the laser, the beam of light, reflects on the holographic plate. And you will see, perhaps it's a picture of a blue whale. So it'll be a blue whale that's 2 feet across. However, if you take that photographic plate, that holographic plate, and you shatter it, you can take the same laser beam with any of the shards of the shattered plate and bounce it off that plate, and you will still see the complete picture of the whale or of the image that you've done. So there's a lovely metaphor in that. And then we have the fourth postulate, which we covered last week a bit, and it was there's a continuum which links all living things together so that the smallest cell does not pulsate without its effects being felt in the furthest reaches of our solar system. And historically, the scientific body which we now view as our scientists, for the longest time assumed that was not the case. And then it has presented itself and come to light in the last 30 or 40 years that in fact they do start to realize that we and it and all of it is connected. Now, we're going to dive into the fifth postulate, and we're going to chat a little about how the number seven manifests itself and how our solar system in and of itself has a septenary nature. And it's constructed out of energies that resonate to seven qualities. So we have this seven aspect, and as my friend and I have been chatting about the sevens of the day, we find a lot of sevens in our general world. We have 7 days of the week. We have seven notes of the scale. We have seven holes in the head. Yep, you can count them. We've got the seven C's. We've got the seven rays. We've got the seven chakras. We've got the seven spirits before the throne in the book of Revelation. We have the seven sins. We've got the seven wonders. We have all kinds of sevens falling out of and into and around us. So it lends itself, and it the use and the knowledge of the seven, the septenary nature, the sevens, is an incredibly important and valid one. And it brings us to the seven rays, which I just, you know, spoke of the first three. And the seven rays is a conversation and a topic that we will cover in another show. So if you will imagine, part of some of the things that are being brilliantly exposed on YouTube right now are the septenary nature of circles. So if you have six satellite circles and then you align them or synthesize them, you can put a circle in the middle of it. This is part of what has been referred to by the ancients as the wheel of life. And so we have some very interesting aspects of that, and we will address that. So the seven spirits before the thrones in the writings of Plato and all initiates who, back in the day, laid down basic propositions for the guidance of humanity through the ages. Pythagoras, the Pythagorean school of initiates, spoke of the music of the spheres. And they spoke with good reason, because each one of the seven rays that we've made reference to, each one of the seven rays, it emits its own sound. And in so doing, sets in motion those forces which must work in unison with it. The sound. The sound, or the word, of each ray, each of these seven rays, passes down through the heavens, reaching into every solar or planetary sphere on that ray note, right down into ourselves and into the myriad lives of the lesser entities who make us up. So the seven rays are the seven breaths of that one life, and in him, in this great massive logos, if you will, or logoi, just as in us, there's an important relationship between sound, breath, and thought. So I'm going to chat a little about a guy named Ledbetter, Charles Ledbetter. He was a brilliant clairvoyant and did some very interesting things about and writing with his cohort Annie Besant, and they've passed along a variety of things. But he talks about the power of creation and how breathing is very important, and again part of the seven the psychology of the seven rays I want to chat about. But he talks about the art of creation. So there's fine energies that run through and enliven our mental bodies. And as we breathe in, this is one of the things that the yogis taught over the years, is the art of breathing and the art of focusing our attention. So fine energies run through this thought meshwork. Okay. So during the moment of out breathing, the mind, if it so wishes, is then best suited to drive the thought forms into manifestation. And during this out breathing, the breath creates or is accompanied by a sound, and the sound or note or word attracts to the thought form the building divas, good old building divas, this is another realm, the elementals which fashion the atoms and molecules into the final form. One of our collaborators in this great scheme of things, Justin Morward Haig, has made reference to. He talks about all is thought, all is mental. In fact, that's one of the hermetic principles. And he talks about the car that you see or the shirt that you're wearing was at one point in time inside the mind of an engineer who designed the car. He could see it, and then he put it to paper, and then he put it to computer, and then he tested it and allowed it all to manifest itself over time. So it just takes a period of time before anything can be manifest. So as we develop our capacity to create with our thought forms, we use this power to create via our yogic training and teaching. Okay. So Ledbetter showed how the breath divides up and charges the seven, here we go again, the seven chakras of the etheric body. Now, each of the seven is ruled by a ray quality, which attracts to the vortex devas of the corresponding rays. Now, tissue forms in that region follow the etheric matrix, which is our aura, if you will. And thenceforth, that tissue will respond to the ray that built it. An important consideration when the ancient art of healing is employed to assist diseased tissues back toward the state of health. So now he's talking about our physical temples and how they are built through ray influence and are maintained until the last in-breathing. The same holds good for substances on the mental and emotional levels of the various planes of manifestation. So in understanding the seven rays, we come to an important comprehension of our real nature at all levels. This is part of Plato's Know Thyself, or the Oracle of Delphi. And this is the basis of esoteric psychology, which will be a little more elaborated on in another show. But the psychology of the seven rays, or esoteric psychology, is an incredibly valid tool for our retooling and understanding who we are. And I want to chat a little about the development of embryos in embryologists and how if you have an embryo and the embryo has various areas of it that would be viewed as the brain area, and if you take a piece of an embryo from the brain area and you put it on the flank area, if you transplant it to the brain, if you take flank tissue and transplant it to the brain area of a specimen and you allow the embryos to continue to develop, the flank tissue transplanted to the brain area of the first will become brain tissue, and the brain tissue transplanted to the area of the other will become flank tissue. So it's interesting how you can play with these areas, and it has the intelligence, it has the knowingness to change the flank tissue to brain or the brain tissue to flank. It's probably a brilliant venue. Okay, so the rays are the builders of the entire human organism, of all its subtle bodies. And the rays cycle in and out of manifestation, and every human being is swept into incarnation on the impulse of some ray, the quality of which colors the lives and forms of each of them. Okay, so the same applies to every plant, every animal, every mineral. And the ray of the human monad continues unchanged through the eons. There are some 63 billion monads working through our planetary system. And they are divided between the three major rays. And there are only about 3 million of these on the, or sorry, 3 billion on the ray of will and power, and the balance are divided evenly between the second and third rays. So every individual has a ray influence. So the psychology of the seven rays came about from records made from observations of man's behavior over the period of the last 18 million years or so. And it's valid for men of all races, creeds, caste, sex, and color. It doesn't matter. It represents the essence of a divine wisdom or gnosis, spelled with a G, won by the blood and sweat of some of the foremost leaders of the human race during their own struggles through many lives. So the psychology of the seven rays and how we understand the seven rays takes into account a third factor mostly ignored by contemporary psychologists. And the other two more traditional factors come under environment and heredity. But the third factor would suggest there's something inner, more of a more spiritual nature for man. And it is only recently that it has found some sort of representation in current schools of psychology. This would be Maslow and Ascioli and Carl Jung. Okay, and the psychology of the seven rays analyzes the anatomy and function of the various units of spiritual energy, which constitute the vehicle of expression of man's soul, and that which drives him. And it, the seven rays and the understanding of the seven rays are key to the true nature of man. Because effectively, they embrace all the scientific, occult, and mystical knowledge and provide a framework for understanding the divine design for atom, cell, planet, galaxy, and man himself. So there's the seven rays, the seven septenary nature and understanding it. We're going to go on to the sixth postulate now. There's seven postulates. There's another one, right? The sixth postulate is the solidity and tangibility of the material world about us is an illusion. It is part of Maya. All is energy manifesting itself as fire and form. Energy and matter are interchangeable. If we study the ancient wisdom with attention to and diligence, we find references everywhere to the illusory nature of the material world, which cannot be avoided. It's impossible not to see it. We're told that our cities and homes and furniture and even our loved possessions like brothers and sisters are all forms of deception. Even our own physical bodies are mutable, ever-changing, impermanent shadows of the truth. The medical community knows that in a period of 2 years, every single cell in your body is replaced effectively. So the context, that it's a given, medical science knows that you do not have the same body you had 2 years ago. It changes every 2 years. Your skin sloughs off, you breathe out various things, the cells of your body are changing constantly. And that's a very interesting thing to ponder upon, because we do have a delusion to think that things are permanent. So this proposition goes even further. Okay, so even the astral body, we have seven bodies, right? The physical, the etheric, the astral, the mental, the higher mental, the atmic, and the buddhic. So even the astral body is a shell, an illusion that must fade. Useful for experiencing the astral world and moving about in it, but still an illusion. And the mental body is equally illusory. So these all interpenetrate and live in the world of mental substance. And the worlds of the personality, the physical, astral, and mental, are an illusion, or Maya. It's the Sanskrit phrase for illusion. So Plato says it, Blavatsky said it, all the ancient Hindus and Chinese traditions teach it, Uspensky, Gurdjieff, Annie Besant, Charles Ledbetter, and Alice Bailey with Dwal Kool say it. Even Einstein in his own way says it. And science is of no help to any of us in denying it. So for a long time, science clung to the matter clung to the concept that matter was made up of tiny particles called atoms. Haha. Later, it was accepted that the atoms themselves were made up of fundamental particles like electrons, protons, and neutrons. But they were anything but fundamental. The quantum theory of the 20s showed that the atom made a coherent mathematical pattern, but the fundamental particles could no longer be treated as separate individual objects, but only as statistical effects. So in fact, what the occult scientist would say is that when atoms behave as a particle one moment and then observed in another behave as a wave, it's a very interesting aspect of the manifestation of energy. So, Deepak Chopra, I think, during one of his lectures at some point in time, had the concept. He had everybody say, stop for a moment and listen. And then he said, listen to people listening. It was a great exercise. But he also started to talk about the fact that if we are 99.99999% space, and the rest is material, there's nothing that we are made of, right? But and we all know that. It's amazing how we can get caught up in the material rendition of who we are, right? So it's the motion of the atoms, because everything about us is but empty atoms in one of these various states, whether it's the state of solid or liquid or gas. So if you take an ice cube, it's solid one moment, you melt it, it's water the next, you boil it, and it's vapor the next, okay? So that's the, you know, we forget this as we work with the various materials, that their motion as well as their inner motions decide how we understand them with our five senses. Our senses cannot tell us continually that the atoms are empty, that their tangible parts are but blurs of energy, or vortices of energy, as the esotericist or the occultist has been describing these atoms since he first symbolized its motion with the ancient and sacred symbols. Our minds have to tell us that their servants, which are the five senses, are fooling us and have fooled us for ages. So the mind, however, the mind is a slayer of the real, as is the senses, for it is hardly able to see things more clearly. It too is restricted to the world of three dimensions when there are other dimensions in which man's real nature exists. And this we call the noumenal world, as in phenomenal. At least we are learning here that things are not what they seem to be. And this is when Einstein sort of pitched up and said E equals MC squared, which meant that matter and energy are interchangeable. And the wisdom of the ages has always said that all is energy and vibration. And when energy manifests as matter, it produces illusion, or Maya. And matter is a very focal, temporary focal point for energy. And that goes for all forms. But underlying all forms, there is an energy pattern at a higher level, constantly pulling matter into it. This is the real, enduring nature of the phenomenon, which we call the noumen. The energy of mind and emotions is interchangeable with the densest objects. The mind of a blessing priest impregnates and becomes part of the water he blesses. And we've seen this with the work of Masuda Emoto, who actually projects thought forms on water and then freezes them and watches the crystalline aspects of the water. And when he projects kind, loving thoughts on the water, the crystal manifestation of these when they freeze are brilliant and wonderful and symmetric and beautiful. However, when he projects negative, hateful, hurtful thoughts on the water, the waters crystallize as a compromised form. They are ugly and misformed, if you will, misshaped. So can one penetrate the densest object with the energy of mind? Masuda Emoto shows us this with water, and the occultists in us would say it can be done. And the phenomenon of thought transference, or telepathy, and of hypnotism involves just that. The samadhi of the yogis is but the realization that all is one. Life links all material form and uses the form to express itself. It's the life essence which is important, not the form. So occultists or esotericists always see everything in terms of vibration, including that of one's own body, which, as we've said, has a note, has a sound. The note of the solar logos is what is made reference to in the Bible as the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and that note, we would say, is the Om. The Om and the Word. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was Om. It's the sound. Okay, we're going to now step into the seventh postulate so we can finish this off, this go-around. And the seventh postulate is there is no death. Only change of state, birth, and rebirth are endless until karma is satisfied and then reincarnation ceases. So science accepts that laws govern the universe. And there are laws that govern water and the flow of sap in trees. There are laws that govern the planets in their orbits, laws that decide the pressures of the blood, the rising of the tides, the setting of the sun. There are laws for every kingdom of nature and for every aspect of life. Surely then, there must be laws for the times and ways in which man must be born on earth and for when he dies. Why should birth and death be exempt from law when all else is governed by it? It's a very interesting concept that we, for mankind, have had, if you will, a cast a spell cast upon us from time immemorial for the last several thousand years, I would suspect, that would suggest that we should fear death. And as we learn more and as we develop our higher spiritual senses, we learn not so much to fear death, but respect it as a part of life. And certainly from our earlier postulates, we're beginning to understand that man is far more complex a being than merely a bag of protoplasm, right? Gas, liquid, and solid. We begin to understand that he has planes of consciousness which forge continuums with all other matter and beings of those subtle planes. We're connected, this great web of connectivity. Man has a vehicle, a physiological body, which operates as an emotional unit capable of sensing emotional energies and forces of the emotional or astral planes. And through this vehicle of emotional consciousness, the actor is en rapport with his audience. The mother rabbit with her babies, the newlywed husband with his wife, etc., etc. This astral body interpenetrates the physical, and its energy fields stand out beyond the surface of the skin. So similarly, man during his life integrates a mental unit for use on mental planes, and with that, which he establishes mental continuums with all beings that think or practice what esoteric science refers to as active intelligence, as distinct from abstract thought, which is a higher faculty and with which the later sections of our conversations will address. The operation of the latter forms of the mechanism of the spiritual embryo, this would be called the causal or cosmic body, which very faintly diffuses through what we call this auric egg, and which is energized by what we call the rainbow bridge, we also call it the sutratma, from the higher planes. And the average man has not yet integrated this body of consciousness. This is the seventh postulate. There is no death. It is just a function of how we live. So ladies and gentlemen, with that, we're going to end this iteration, and we are going to continue our work next week. And I would like very much to thank you for your time and your attention. Happy Good Friday.